hang out.
Does your not-girlfriend know about any of this?
She pressed. No, and we're not seeing each other anymore. She'd gotten a little too demanding. Wanting to make plans, wanting to meet my parents. I couldn't give her any of that. And I didn't want to, either, after I'd overheard her telling one of her friends that the busty Sloane Walton was definitely a slut.
Oh?
She said innocently. You don't look broken up about it, I observed. She shrugged.
She just wasn't very nice. You could do better.
But if you did do better and you were with someone nice, I guess we wouldn't get to hang out like this. And I kind of like our secret little friendship or whatever. Friendship didn't describe what I felt for her. I was friends with Knox and Nash Morgan, but I sure as hell wouldn't curl up with them in a pillow nest to listen to music. Hell, I wouldn't do that with Addie either. Maybe Cindy Crawford.
I like us too, I told her.
I caught a glimpse of the bright smile she couldn't quite hide as she ducked her head and reached for the CD player. I slid my arm around her shoulder and guided her head to rest on my chest. Between the pillows, Shania Twain's From This Moment On, and the soft, warm heat of Sloane pressed up against me, I felt almost happy. I could nearly pretend that this was my life, here in this house, with the good, sweet girl in my arms. The song was over too quickly, changing to a country anthem, something about black eyes and blue tears. She was never going back. It must have been the exhaustion that painted the story in my head. Walking away, moving on, growing up. For a second, I wanted it so badly that I didn't realize how tight I was clinging to Sloane until my fingers started to ache. Wincing, I relaxed my grip on her. She tilted her head to look up at me.
It's okay. You can hang on to me. I won't break.
I pushed her face back down and resumed my hold on her, keeping it gentle this time. The track changed again. The third song was the ballad, I Won't Leave You Lonely, and despite my best efforts, the words got in my head and tattooed themselves on my soul. I'd never be able to hear this song and not think about Sloane and how safe she made me feel. I wanted to hear it again, but I wasn't about to ask her to replay it. Maybe I'd buy the album myself and hide it in my car. When the final chords of the song played in my ear, Sloane slid a slim arm over my stomach and clung to me. I'd fulfilled my promise of three songs, but there was nothing for me at home, and there was everything for me here. She didn't say anything when the next song began. Neither did I.
12. Livin' La Vida Library, Sloane. The library was my happy place, not my horny place. Despite the action my vibrator had seen last night, I still unlocked the door feeling edgy and unsatisfied, and I blamed him. I relocked the door and flicked on the first floor lights. My shoulders instantly relaxed as the quiet and natural order soothed me. I loved being the first person here in the mornings, loved soaking up these precious moments of silence while gearing up for another day. Despite the stereotypes, the library was rarely quiet. There were two quiet rooms tucked away at the back of the first floor for studying or reading or the weekly meditation class, but there was life in these walls. When I'd first become head librarian, we'd been crammed into a musty municipal building with peeling linoleum floors, flickering fluorescent lights, and creaky metal shelves. The entire catalog was about a decade out of date, and the staff and patrons had to share 2 8-year-old laptops. Now, the citizens of Knockemout entered a bright, airy space with cozy seating nooks, lightning-fast Wi-Fi, 2 entire floors of books and media, and all the technology a reader could want. Books on every subject sat neatly on the white oak shelves lined up like a precision marching band. The long, low-circulation desk was clutter-free and ready for business. We'd gone with a wheelchair-friendly low-pile carpet and a soft green that made me think of grassy pastures. Tuesday morning sunlight slanted in through the generous windows, bathing several varieties of houseplants in its beams. Dumping my tote on the circulation desk, I queued up a fun playlist of instrumental versions of pop songs over the sound system and booted up the two desktop computers. I checked the events calendar posted on the wall against the internal calendar to make sure the listings were up to date, and made mental notes to send a confirmation email to the animal rescue for our Catterday event and order extra cookies for Drag Queen Story Hour since we'd run out early last month. Two organizations had the upstairs conference rooms booked for meetings today, which meant I needed to make sure the tables were configured correctly and the whiteboards were free of teenage graffiti. The fish girl was coming to rebalance the water in the children's section fish tank. I fired off a quick text to Jamal, the youth services librarian, to ask him if he'd run the UV wand over the floor cushions since the elementary school had reported an outbreak of pink eye yesterday. Coffee came next. I stowed my bag under the desk and headed for the coffee counter. We'd sprung for one of those fancy instant espresso machines and a dishwasher to deal with the mugs. Not only did patrons enjoy the step up from regular drip coffee, it was just another experience that encouraged them to stay a little longer, to take a breath and enjoy themselves with a book or socialize with staff and patrons. Machine levels checked and coffee condiments restocked, I unloaded the previous day's mugs from the dishwasher and organized them on their hooks. I wondered if Lucian felt like this when he strode into his offices every morning. Was it pride like I felt? Not that I was thinking about him again, because I definitely wasn't. Except now I definitely was. Had he even thought about me after I'd left his office yesterday? Oh my God, stop, I said to myself out loud. Stop what? Mother of dragons, where did you come from? I demanded, immediately dropping the hands I'd raised in a protective stance. Naomi, pretty in a long-sleeved ribbed dress and tights, stood clutching a gallon-sized to-go coffee. That depends on how far back you want to go. I woke up to my naked husband. I held up a hand. New rule in our friendship, no bragging about your stellar sex life when your friend is in the middle of a dry spell. That's fair, Naomi agreed. Despite the fact that she already had a cup of coffee in hand, she headed straight for the espresso maker. A swing of chestnut hair fell over her face in a perfect wave. Your hair looks good, I noted. Thanks, Waylay did it. Jeremiah got her an astronomically expensive curling iron for Christmas, and she's already mastered it. So, what are we stopping? Hmm? I feigned innocence. You were standing there lost in some sort of reverie and then ordered yourself to stop. I hadn't mentioned yesterday's unfortunate incident with Lucian to Naomi and Lena, mainly because I didn't want to deal with their demands for a play-by-play or their misguided hopes that this was the beginning of the end of our feud. I also didn't want to admit to anyone that Lucian Rollins had made my lady parts feel things they had no business feeling where he was concerned. Oh, I'm just all up in my head about stuff when I really need to be concentrating on other stuff. Smooth. Real smooth. Yeah. You know I know you're lying, right? I have a 12-year-old at home. I'm not lying, I lied. She pinned me with an earnest look. You also know I'm here for you whenever you're ready to talk about whatever it is you're lying about, right? Yeah, I know. I said it mostly to my sneakers. I wasn't required to tell my friends every single thing. I didn't expect that of them. I did expect them to tell me the big, important things, though. Whatever the hell Lucian and I had done yesterday didn't qualify as big or important. We'd barely touched. And whatever grazes or brushes or intense looks of fiery longing had passed between us before Petula came barreling in all meant nothing. Absolutely nothing at all. Great. Now I was thinking about it again. And Naomi was looking at me expectantly as if she was waiting for an answer. Hey, do you know if Jamal disinfected the kids' section last night? I asked. A subject change, not at all suspicious, she teased. You're still coming to dinner tonight, right? Nash and Lena will be there. My social life consisted of me being the fifth wheel tagging along with two couples with smoldering hot sex lives. Ugh. I really needed to make some changes in my life. I wanted to be the one making my friends uncomfortable with over-the-top PDA. I wanted to be making plans for the future with my hot life partner with a large penis. A salacious memory of Lucian's trouser-covered erection immediately appeared in my mind. No! Bad brain, bad! Lucian was not life partner material. I'll be there, I said grimly. The day was busy enough that I managed to table all thoughts of Lucian, except for the particularly steamy ones that popped into my head every 10 to 12 minutes. By the time I called the afternoon staff meeting to order, I'd already tackled all my to-do list, plus dealt with the elevator maintenance people from the annual inspection, the fish girl, and a hysterical toddler who refused to come out of the pillow fort. Her dad was recovering from knee surgery, which meant I was the one who had to crawl in after her. It had taken one bag of goldfish crackers and the promise that she could scan all the books at checkout to negotiate her surrender. Those are some great ideas on fundraisers for our free breakfast summer program, I said, scribbling down the last suggestion on my iPad, then scrolling back to the agenda. Let's see. Ah, book club. I heard back from Matt Haig's agent. She said he's happy to answer our five-question Q&A for book club. The news was met with enthusiastic mumbles around the table. Everyone had their mouths full of baked goods, a staff meeting requirement. What's next? I asked. Kristen, the adult services librarian, waved her cheese Danish in my direction. She was a curvy woman in her mid-50s who had taken up dating bikers and pole dancing after her divorce. I ordered the new Cecilia Blatch romance novel for the catalog, and my clever social media stalking of her reveals that she lives about an hour from here. What if we hosted a signing for her? Maybe something on Valentine's Day. I like it. She could give a reading and then sign copies of her books, I mused. I had read three of the author's titles. The growly alpha heroes were just overprotective enough without being assholey. The heroines were the perfect balance of feisty and endangered, and the sex on the page was straight up fire. I wondered what Lucian was like in bed. Would he be as restrained as he was in everyday life? Or did he let go of all pretenses between the sheets? Oh, for fuck's sake! I brought a hand to my cheek. My skin felt like the surface of the sun. I needed to deal with this. I needed sex with someone who was not he who shall not be named. I forcefully evicted all thoughts of the man from my brain and focused on the last few agenda items. Good meeting, I said, closing the cover of my tablet. If anyone comes up with anything else, your door is always open, they said in unison. One more thing, Jamal said. At 26, the youth services librarian was our youngest employee. The kids adored him. Not just because he wore cool baseball hats to work and played ultimate frisbee, he was also a talented amateur artist whose sketches and caricatures entertained patrons of all ages. We received Marjorie Ronsanto's weekly email complaint. Our collective groan interrupted him. About the LGBTQ plus books in the children's section being dangerously inclusive, he continued, glancing down at the printout. Actually, we received the complaint meant for us and one she wrote to Target for using an interracial couple in their TV commercial. She also reminded us of her generous donation of the break room trash can. I hate that thing, Kristen said. It was one of those smart trash cans that wasn't quite smart enough to open when it was supposed to. 6 months ago, I had lost my temper and finally pried the lid off it. Can't she take a week off from hating everything? Naomi asked. Marjorie's on a one-woman crusade to be a gigantic pain in the ass, Blaze said, crossing her tattooed arms over her chest. Blaze was one of our board members and volunteers. She also put the L in LGBTQ+. Her mother clearly didn't love her enough when she was a child, I said dryly. All in favor of doing what we always do with Marjorie's complaints? Everyone around the table raised their hands. I'll send her the canned response, Agatha, Blaze's wife and fellow board member, volunteered. When you do, tell her that her copy of The Witch's Mountain Lovers, a dubious consent paranormal reverse harem, was due back 2 days ago, Kristen said smugly. Agatha grinned and mimed, dropping a microphone. Back in the safety of my office, I cracked open my afternoon root beer and flopped down behind my desk. It wasn't shiny, sterile glass like Lucian's. My office was furnished with what I like to think of as generic administrator furniture, sturdy budget pieces that lacked personality. I made up for it by painting the walls a hunter green and cramming the shelves full of personal memorabilia. It was cluttered, colorful, and chaotic, just like me. A delightful hot mess such as myself did not belong with an emotionally stunted neat freak, not even between the sheets. No, if I was serious about finding my life partner, I needed to focus on that. Not the potential of really hot sex with a guy I didn't actually like. I remembered the dating app and perked up immediately. Perhaps my future husband was already in my inbox. I pounced on my phone like my cat on her chicken and waffle flavored treats, and immediately deflated. No notifications. How was that possible? I checked my inbox and found it empty. This can't be right, I mumbled to myself. I scrolled through the history of male profiles I'd hearted. Seriously? How was a girl supposed to get laid, let alone fall in love, when none of the men I'd hearted had hearted me back? Maybe the app was broken. I'd probably missed a button to publish my profile. I'd have to ask Steph or Lena, and soon, seeing as how my quivering sex was so ready for action, it was starting to consider Lucian Rollins as a potential candidate.
When you're finished scowling at your screen, I have something for you.
I backhanded my tumbler off the desk and hurled my phone in a wide arc. I was halfway out of my chair before I came to my senses. And my senses told me that Lucian freaking Rollins was standing in the doorway of my office. What? Why? How? I croaked as I came to my feet. He crouched down smoothly and picked up the water bottle I'd accidentally assaulted.
Funny, I remember you being more eloquent than this.
Don't start with me, Lucifer, I warned, snatching the tumbler out of his manly hand. Why are you haunting my office instead of purchasing blood diamonds and selling stolen internal organs on the black market? He tossed a manga novel onto my desk. My manga novel. Well, technically, the library's.
You left this in my office. I heard the librarian here is a stickler for late fees.
You know there's this thing called the Postal Service, I said, liberating my phone from the floor.
Unfortunately for you, I was already going to be in town.
He tucked his hands into his pockets and prowled my office in a slow circuit, pausing to look more closely at my personal effects. He was too big to be in here. He seemed to suck all the oxygen and color out of the room until the only thing I was aware of was his presence.
What has you spoiling for a fight, Pixie? Did another squirrel get stuck in the book return?
You're hilarious. So funny. I'm so glad we had this time together. Why don't I open this second story window and assist you out of it? I offered, rubbing the wrist that had connected with my water bottle.
Interesting reading material, he said, tilting his head at the book on my desk.
It's for a teenage boy with dyslexia. I figured he'd like all the fight scenes, but I wanted to read it first before I recommended it to him. I didn't know why I was explaining myself to him. It wasn't like he actually cared what I read, and I certainly didn't put any stock in his opinion of me or my reading habits.
Nearly every memory I have of you involves books.
It came out of him sounding like a confession. We stared at each other for a long, silent 30 seconds. I shook my head. You know, sometimes I think I imagined it all. He put down the framed photo of me and my parents at the ribbon cutting for the library and fixed those assessing gray eyes on me.
Imagined what?
You, me, the cherry tree. I thought we were friends.
We were. Once.
He layered blame on top of that one syllable until it was all I heard. I don't get you. I didn't get you as a high school senior, and I don't get you as a business mogul, and I sure as hell don't get what happened yesterday. His eyes changed. It was an almost imperceptible shift, but I'd spent a lifetime studying him and didn't miss the glint of silver.
Let's add yesterday to the long list of mistakes better left in the past, he suggested.
I've already forgotten it, I boasted.
Which is why you were the one to bring it up 5 seconds ago, he pointed out.
I'd forgotten how deftly he played his enemies. He and my father had spent countless hours with a chessboard between them. I may have brought it up, but we both know it's no coincidence that yesterday happened and now here you are, paying me a visit in a place you've never once set foot in. The air in the room was electric. I could practically see the sparks flying between us. But they weren't the romantic, will-they-won't-they sparks. These were the kind that burned things to the ground, the kind that destroyed everything in their wake. Through my window, the late afternoon sun bathed his face in golden glow and shadows.
How's your mother?
He asked before turning back to the next piece of me that caught his eye. She's fine. His expression shifted to irritated patience. She's okay, I amended. I helped her go through some of Dad's things yesterday after dress shopping, and it was... what? Excruciating? Heartbreaking? Even though we each set aside favorite pieces, boxing up his clothes added another layer of pain to our goodbye. Difficult, I decided.
I was thinking the other day about Simon's gardening t-shirt, Lucian said. From the one and only 5K he ever completed.
I was relieved he was looking away from me because I had to bring my fingers to my mouth to keep the unexpected sob inside. Knock 'em out runs for breast cancer, I said when I'd regained my composure. It was a hot pink, double extra large freebie t-shirt with cartoon breasts emblazoned across the chest. My father's medium frame swam in it. But he'd been so proud of his accomplishment and the money he'd raised that he turned it into his gardening shirt, knotting it on his hip like he was a teenage girl. I'd spent years in agonized humiliation because of that shirt. It was the only item of his clothing I'd kept.
The first time I saw him in it, he was attacking that bush in your backyard. The one with the red berries, with electric hedge trimmers, and telling your mother that he was Simon Scissorhands.
My laugh, watery though it was, surprised us both. His lips curved, and for a moment, it felt like there was no desk between us, no ugly history. He used to make me laugh, and I used to make him smile. I don't know how to react when you're nice to me, I announced.
If you didn't make it so difficult, I'd be civil more often, he said dryly.
It's probably better this way. You might sprain something pretending to be human. The ghost of a smile remained on his mouth. About yesterday, I prompted. What about yesterday? What the hell was I thinking bringing it up? Again.
What about it?
There was a dare in his question. I met Holly, I blurted out, going for the first topic that didn't involve us touching each other. She seemed very grateful for the job. Lena told us how you hired her. Maybe you're not a complete asshole.
No one gives a compliment like you, Pixie.
I rolled my eyes. Oh, shut up. I'm trying to be nice.
The only nice thing you can say about me is that I hired someone to do a job.
Maybe I'd have more to say if you'd tell me why my mother is so grateful to you, I reminded him.
Leave it alone, Sloane,
he said wearily. The awkward truce between us was cracking, crumbling. I didn't know if I was relieved or disappointed. Lucian turned his attention to the contents of the bookcase. His gaze landed on the display case containing a bronzed softball. Those lips went flat again.
What's this?
He asked, eyeing the acrylic case. It's the ball from my last game. Maeve had it bronzed as a joke. It had been my first real fall-on-the-floor-couldn't-catch-my-breath laugh after my injury, after finding out that my plans for a softball scholarship were officially over. I didn't know if the twinge in my wrist was real or just the echo of a memory, and I didn't realize I was massaging it until Lucian looked down. His eyes went storm cloud gray. He opened his mouth, then closed it with a snap. What? I asked, not bothering to keep the annoyance out of my tone.
I don't have time for this. For you.
Like I said, no one asked you to play delivery boy.
And I didn't ask you to get involved and end your softball career, he said.
Clearly we're even then, I joked.
As always, you're infuriating, irresponsible, and immature.
His tone was flippant, as if I were barely worth the effort to insult. And you're a mercurial pain in my ass, I pointed out, feeling the sting.
Always so charming. It's such a mystery why you're still single.
The man wielded sarcasm with the dexterity of a master manipulator. I had the urge to pat myself down and search for physical wounds. You're late for your next ritual sacrifice, Lucifer. You'd better be going. He smirked.
Thank you for reminding me why our relationship is what it is. Every once in a while, I manage to forget what you really are.
Is that so? And just what do you think I am? I asked.
Dangerous.
I flashed him a saccharine sweet smile. Do you think you can find your way out, or do you want me to help you down the stairs face first?
I think I can manage. Keep your things out of my life.
Yeah? Well, keep your life out of my work, I shot back, crossing the room and gesturing toward the open door. Hey, Uncle Lucian, Waylay called from behind the community desk where she was working on a laptop. The two teenage boys leaning against the desk looked at Lucian with wide eyes.
Hey, Way,
Lucian said, stalking down the stairs.
Do you need us to escort him out, Ms. Walton?
Lonnie Potter offered, hooking his thumb in the direction of Lucian's retreating back. His friend's eyeballs doubled in size behind his glasses. I would have laughed if I hadn't been too busy breathing flames. No. But thank you, Lonnie. That's very gentlemanly of you. I stomped back to my desk and pressed the heels of my hands to my eyes.
What the hell does mercurial mean?
I heard Lonnie whisper to his friend. For fuck's sake, I muttered. I needed a meditation class, or hypnotherapy, or some kind of drug that rendered me immune to Lucian Rollins. So what if he hated me? So what if he went out of his way to piss me off? Every time I reacted, I was giving him what he wanted. That alone should be enough to stop me.
Knock, knock.
The tentative greeting came from Naomi, who entered my office with my sister.
I was bringing Maeve up to you, and we ran into Lucian on the stairs, Naomi said. I think he actually snarled when I said hello.
Please don't speak that name in my presence ever again, I begged.
Wow, you two really can't stand each other, can you?
Maeve observed.
You guys used to be so tight.
They did? When? Naomi pounced on the information like a cat with a catnip taco. I'm going to ask you both a huge favor that involves changing the subject immediately, I interrupted. She doesn't like to talk about whatever it is that happened with Luke. That guy, Naomi whispered to my sister.
I just so happened to have the perfect subject change, Maeve said, eyeing the visitors' chairs that were buried under books and the remains of a children's diorama of the first public library in Knockemout.
Let's take this to the conference room, I suggested, wanting to get away from the Lucian-y vibe of my office.
I need to get back downstairs, Naomi said. Niecy's coming in when she finishes her shift at Dino's, and I'm helping her find some Medicare information for her dad. Thanks for bringing me up, Maeve called after her.
Yeah, thanks, I said belatedly. Come on. I led the way to the conference room and settled in at the table with my sister. Okay, lay it on me.
Mary Louise Upshaw, Maeve said, removing a file from her slim, snazzy briefcase. She was arrested for possession and transporting a controlled substance. She was sentenced to 20 years in prison. She's 11 years into her sentence in Frouse Correctional Center, about an hour south of here.
That seems unusually harsh, I noted.
It is, my sister agreed. The average sentence for similar charges is usually closer to 3 to 5 years.
Why would her case warrant such an excessive sentence? It was her first offense.
The judge hearing the case made a career out of being tough on drugs. He could have been making some kind of statement.
I picked up the folder and looked at Mary Louise's mugshot. She looked like a scared suburban mom who had no idea how she'd gotten herself into a predicament that involved a mugshot. She doesn't look like someone who would traffic a few pounds of weed and a couple tabs of ecstasy.
From what I could gather, Mary Louise claimed the drugs weren't hers and initially pleaded not guilty. But a few weeks later, she changed her plea to no contest.
I thought about what Alan had told me the day of Dad's funeral. My dumb stuff had consequences. Consequences my mom paid for. Oh, Alan, I sighed. Why didn't she appeal?
She has, or at least she's tried. She's been through 4 public defenders since her arrest. I have the contact info for her current representation, Maeve said.
I knew from my sister and my father that public defenders were notoriously overworked and the turnover was brisk.
I'm sorry it's not a deeper dive. I've been in court, and there were some other things demanding my attention, so I didn't have as much time to dig into the case as I would have liked.
I flipped through the paperwork. I appreciate you doing this. I know you've got a lot going on.
Never too much for family, she said.
There was that flare of guilt again. I had been too busy for family. Too busy to start one. Hey, how are you doing with everything? I asked, reaching across the table and squeezing her hand. She squeezed back.
I'm doing okay. Chloe is a good distraction. That girl can suck all the attention out of a room and leave its occupants too exhausted to think after she leaves.
But I really miss him. Me too, I said. I felt like there was more to the sad shrug, the forced smile. Something she wasn't telling me. What else is going on? I pressed. An uninitiated observer would have missed the flicker in her eyes, but I was a nosy little sister. I saw it all.
Nothing, she said innocently. Liar. You've been off since before Dad died. What's going on? You might as well spill it because you know I won't leave you alone. She rolled her eyes. Ugh, fine. I was seeing this guy and it didn't work out. It was nothing. No dramatic breakup. No tearful confrontation. My eyebrows winged up. You were seeing someone and managed to keep it a secret in this town? It wasn't exactly a relationship I wanted broadcast to the world. You had a secret taboo affair and managed to keep it quiet? I'm impressed. Why did you dump him? How did you... Never mind. I'm too busy for a relationship. He wanted serious, and I didn't. Don't have the time for serious. My sister was the calm, collected person you'd want on your side in the middle of an emergency. She never let emotions get the best of her. The fact that she was pretending not to be upset about the breakup told me it was more than nothing. I'm sorry it didn't work out, I said, treading lightly. It's fine. Thanks again for play rehearsal pickup. That's been helpful, Maeve said, reeling in her emotions. I studied her for a moment, then decided to let it go. For now. Hey, do you and Chloe want to come over Sunday? We'll make Dad's chili and Mom's cornbread and watch Aaron Brockovich. And I could sneakily work more information out of her about this mystery man. The Simon Walton Memorial Trifecta, Maeve said with a smile. Count us in. Great. My sister packed up her tidy briefcase and got to her feet. Listen, if you decide to dig into this Mary Louise case, let me know. I'm interested. Thanks, Maeve Gravy, I said, wrapping her in a hug. Anytime, Sloaney Baloney.
13. An Electrifying Dinner. Lucian. I pulled my Range Rover into Knox's driveway behind his truck. The lights were on in the big house, casting a glow that cut through the winter gloom. I'd loved coming here as a boy. The freedom Liza Jay and her husband, Pop, had allowed. Entire summers were spent here swimming in the creek, sleeping under the stars, climbing trees, daring each other to do the stupid shit of boyhood. Of course, once we discovered girls, our priorities had changed. The old timber house had changed as well. Since Knox and Naomi had moved in, there was a tidy order that had never existed before. There were candles in the windows and boughs of pine looped through the porch railing. They'd gone all out for Christmas, their first as a family. It had been admittedly spectacular. I couldn't blame Knox for the sleigh and reindeer on the roof. If I'd had a chance at a family like that, I'd probably go crazy overcompensating for all the holidays I hadn't had as a kid, too. I got out of the car and debated smoking my cigarette now, grabbing the last few quiet moments before going inside. It had been a feat of sheer willpower not to smoke it after leaving the library. The odds were I'd need it after dinner. Sometimes I enjoyed these loud, casual gatherings, and other times I felt like a ghost haunting a happy family. As boys, Knox and Nash had accepted me for who I was. As men, we could pick up and put down our friendship at any time without consequences or hurt feelings. But with Naomi and Lena now added to the mix, the relationship seemed to take on more responsibilities. If I disappeared to Washington or New York or Atlanta for weeks without contact, I had no doubt Naomi would track me down, demanding to know if everything was okay and when she could expect me back. Lena would, at the very least, expect a heads up on my departure and a general timeline for my return. Both would take it personally if I went weeks or months without reaching out. Women complicated things, and not just for the partners they chose. For everyone connected to their partners. The front door banged open, and Knox ambled out just as headlights cut across the driveway. Muted music filled the night air over the rumble of engine. Sloane's Jeep pulled in behind my vehicle. The lights and engine cut out, but the music continued. It was, "Man, I feel like a woman." I sighed. Some things never changed. Knox reached me. He was wearing jeans and a thermal shirt in charcoal gray with one chewed-up sleeve. You didn't tell me she was coming, I said, hooking a thumb in the direction of the Jeep. The song ended, and the driver's side door opened. Sloane slid to the ground, her cowboy boots landing with a clomp. Who's Rover? She called out to Knox. I stepped around the hood and watched her recoil.
You didn't tell me he was coming, she snapped.
This is exactly why I'm standing out here instead of opening my goddamn front door to you two, Knox announced.
What are you grumbling about now?
Sloane demanded, storming toward us. She was wearing leggings and an oversized ruby red sweater that matched her lipstick. Her hair was half up and half down, with the length of it hanging in thick, careless waves. Casual. Touchable. Waylay and I had to listen to Naomi talk to herself for an hour about which one of you to uninvite tonight, Knox explained. I believe the term is disinvite, I said. Fuck you, Knox replied.
I don't understand the conflict. I'm Naomi's friend and her boss, ergo I win,
Sloane said testily. Yeah, well, Luce here is my friend, and apparently Naomi is worried about him, Knox added. I ignored the smug look on Sloane's face. There's nothing to worry about, I insisted, both annoyed and oddly comforted that someone out there was worried for me.
Besides being a soulless cadaver hell-bent on bringing misery to all, Sloane added.
Just you, Pixie. I only live to destroy your happiness, I said. That right there is the reason I'm freezing my ass off in my driveway instead of making out with my wife. So this is what's going to happen. The three of us are going to go inside, and you two are going to behave like adult humans with impulse control, or else... Sloane's eyes narrowed.
Or else what?
She always had the wrong reaction to challenges like that. Knox's grin was wicked. I'm glad you asked. Since I don't want Naomi to know about this, and since I can only punch one of you in the face, and since I'm a little bit afraid of you, he pointed at Sloane, I had to get creative. He held up two small boxes with wires running out of them. Sloane was already shaking her head.
No, nope, no freaking way.
Oh, yes, freaking way, he insisted. What are those? I asked. Well, Lucy, Knox continued conversationally. These here are transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation machines, a.k.a. TENS, a.k.a. period cramp torture devices the girls at Honky Tonk deploy during their Code Reds every month. They tape these sticky pad things onto a guy's stomach and proceed to shock the shit out of him to show him what they go through on a monthly basis. Sloane scoffed and crossed her arms.
You're not seriously saying you plan to electrocute your dinner guests?
I'll be honest, I don't care about dinner or our friendship that much, I said, pulling my car keys out of my pocket. Sloane put her hands on her hips in triumph.
Good riddance.
Knox snatched the keys from me. I don't think you're hearing me. Naomi has decided you both can't be invited to the same social shit, which means she'll schedule twice as much social shit to make sure both of you pains in the ass get the same amount of quality fucking time with us. And I don't want more social shit. I don't want more quality fucking time. I want you two to put aside your petty, we have a secret feud that we won't talk about bullshit, and make my wife forget that you can't stand each other. This is ridiculous, I insisted. No, you're fucking ridiculous for making me do this. So either you both go in there strapped up to these toys, pretend to be adults for the evening and make my wife happy, or you both go the hell home and think about how stupid you must be for making me the fucking voice of reason in this scenario. I glanced down at Sloane, who seemed to be weighing the ridiculous options.
What's for dinner?
She asked, eyes narrowed in calculation. Tacos.
Damn it,
she muttered, and grabbed one of the TENS units. You're joking.
I'm hungry, and I'm proving to the bearded barber here that I'm a better friend than you are,
Sloane announced. She pulled up the hem of her turtleneck, baring her smooth stomach. I'm not doing this, I told Knox. I'm not forcing you,
You know the choices and the consequences, but I meant what I said. It's both of you or neither, and if I go back in there and have to tell my wife that you two couldn't even agree to not be assholes for however long it takes to shove a bunch of tacos into your face, she's going to be upset, and that'll make me fucking furious. I'll have no choice but to make it my mission in life to destroy you both. Knox threatened.
What's the matter, Lucifer? Afraid of a little pain or afraid you won't be able to control yourself?
Sloane taunted with a challenge in her eyes. Swearing, I yanked my belt free and untucked my shirt. For the record, these better be the best tacos I've ever had because I'm not convinced this friendship is worth it. Sloane's green eyes skimmed over the skin I was bearing as I slapped the two adhesive pads to my abdomen. Get it out of your system now, because Waylay is sitting between you two. If my girl catches you being dicks to each other, she gets to shock the shit out of you. As we marched toward the house, I comforted myself with the fact that it would be Waylay, not Knox, behind the controls. Besides, how bad could period pain be? Lightning bolts of agony raced across my abdomen and down my legs. I slapped a palm to the table, rattling glasses and silverware. Piper yipped, and Waylon grumbled about their exile on the other side of the dog gate. Waylay snickered, and all conversations ceased as everyone turned to look at me. Knox looked smug. Sloane's shoulders were shaking with silent laughter on the other side of Waylay's blonde head. Everyone else looked concerned.
You okay there, Lucy?
Nash asked from across the table.
Fine, I rasped as the pain dissipated.
Sloane dabbed at the corners of her eyes with her napkin.
I believe you were saying my voice reminded you of a rabid chihuahua. Did you want to continue that thought, or...
Her napkin and salsa spoon fell to the floor as Sloane's entire body tensed. She let out a high-pitched squeak.
What's going on?
Naomi asked from Knox's right.
Nothing,
Waylay, Knox, Sloane, and I announced at the same time. We all managed innocent smiles that didn't seem to be fooling anyone.
Naomi, what did you say our reception colors are?
Lena asked, drawing her attention to the other side of the table.
I didn't insult him, you little punk,
Sloane hissed to Waylay.
You were baiting him. That's just as bad, trust me. I'm basically the queen of trash-talking on the soccer field,
Waylay informed her. You have to have my unit dialed up higher, I accused. It had felt as if my insides were in danger of exiting my body.
Actually, you're only at an 8. Knox and me figured Sloane had an advantage, seeing as how she's a girl and has had her period for a few decades. Exactly how old do you think I am?
Sloane asked, then shook her head.
Never mind. Just tell me what mine is set at. You're a 9.
Sloane punched the air in victory.
Yes!
Naomi was watching us again. I held up a taco and gave her a friendly nod.
Take me to a 10, I told Waylay when Naomi looked away.
I don't know. Knox said the girls aren't allowed to use level 10 at the bar anymore since Garth Lipton almost pooped his pants.
Take me to 10, I insisted tersely.
There's nothing heroic about shitting your pants, Rollins,
Sloane said under her breath. Her body went rigid again, and the taco she was holding exploded when it hit her plate.
Gah! Waylay, I wasn't insulting him. I was giving him advice. It sounded like an insult to me. Besides, you swore, and that's a dollar for the swear jar, which means Aunt Naomi gets to spend extra time in the stupid produce aisle. Waylay, how are your tacos?
Naomi called.
They're good. They'd be better without all the slimy, weird vegetables in them, but I guess I can suffer through that part,
the kid said. Garth Lipton is 40 years older than me, I said to Sloane over the top of Waylay's head.
I'm just looking out for you. You could barely handle an 8. I'd hate to see what a 10 would do to you. I mean, I'd love it, but I'm being the bigger, more mature adult here,
she whispered back. Just because you can't handle a 10 has no bearing on my endurance. I'll be fine.
I am a woman. 2 weeks ago, I had cramps so bad I had to lie down on the floor of the public restroom at the mechanic's garage, and then I had to get back up and go do my job for 8 hours. I was born to handle a 10. You two aren't saying mean things, but your tones are getting kinda snippy,
Waylay warned. Take me to a 10, I ordered.
Fine, 10s all around. I'll show you how to handle it, Sloane snapped. I hate to point this out because I'm definitely having fun here, but I think you guys are losing sight of the reason Knox is letting me electrocute you.
First Knox, now Waylay. The voices of reason were getting less likely as the evening wore on. Sloane glared at me over Waylay's head. I glared back.
Bite me,
she mouthed at me. You're not my type, I mouthed back.
Is everything okay down there?
Naomi asked, sounding nervous.
Fine, except for Lucian scowling at me like a...
Sloane grunted, her face contorting in pain.
Worth it, she wheezed.
You're such an idiot, I told her. And then I was doubling over, my face hovering over my plate of tacos as an excruciating current of pain tore through me. It's in my kidneys. Waylon and Piper were barking frantically now.
Knox Morgan, why is our daughter electrocuting our guests?
Naomi shrieked. My friend held up his hands. Daze, there's a perfectly logical explanation for this.
Jesus, Nash muttered. I don't know which one to arrest first. You know what? I think I'll go get the cobbler. And more alcohol?
Lena said, getting up from the table.
I'll help,
Waylay said, escaping the room before a punishment could be dealt out.
I'll supervise,
Nash volunteered. We got to our feet and began ripping off electrodes. My legs felt like they were made of brittle wood. One wrong step and I'd collapse. There was an echo of pain in my lower back. I took Sloane by the upper arm and steered her toward the back door. Outside, I said tersely.
But I want to watch Naomi tear Knox a new one,
she complained. You have a lifetime of opportunities for that. I dragged her outside onto the deck and shut the door. It was cold and dark. The naked trees cast skeletal shadows over the snow from the stingy light of the crescent moon.
Did level 10 fry your brain?
Sloane asked, slipping out of my grip. We're calling a truce, I announced.
That's not how that works.
I'm 40 years old. I run a multi-million-dollar business. I own property. I pay taxes. I vote. I cook. I get the goddamn flu shot every year.
Congratulations. Where can I send your gold star?
We're adults, I said, pointing to the window where it appeared chaos was still raining. And that in there was the latest performance in a long line of immature shit shows that we've starred in together. Sloane crossed her arms and looked down at her feet. Her boots were brown with purple stitching.
I'm not saying you're right, but you're not exactly wrong.
This has to stop. She puffed out her cheeks. The light from inside made the stud in her nose twinkle. She looked like a mischievous forest fairy.
I know.
She turned away from me and moved to the railing.
I hate that every conversation with you has me regressing to a teenager with no impulse control. It's embarrassing.
I hate that I let you get under my skin. It's infuriating, I admitted. She gave the night sky a small smile.
So you admit to being partially human?
I'll deny it if you repeat it. She hugged her arms tighter around her and hunched her shoulders against the cold. Slowly, I moved closer until my arm brushed her shoulder, lending her some of my heat.
What are we supposed to do? Just forgive and forget?
She asked. That's not possible, I said dryly. She let out a short, bitter laugh.
Tell me about it.
We have to come up with some sort of solution. For them. We both glanced over our shoulders to the kitchen where everyone was gathered around the island with coffee and cobbler.
They look really happy without us,
Sloane observed. Then we'll find a way to keep them happy with us.
Let's start with no interaction between us when we're in the group, she suggested. I don't think we're ready for polite small talk.
I hated to admit it, but she was right. It was safer to just avoid each other until we developed a tolerance. Fine. And if for whatever reason one of us doesn't feel they can stand the side of the other for a particular event, we make prior arrangements to stagger our attendance.
That is such a rich person fancy dinner gala thing to say. No offense,
she added quickly, then winced.
This is going to be harder than I thought.
It's a habit, nothing more, I insisted. I wasn't about to allow a habit to control me. Unironically, I pulled my daily cigarette from the breast pocket of my shirt and produced my lighter. Sloane looked pointedly at the cigarette as I lit it.
Some habits are harder to break than others.
She had no idea the struggle I'd endured that afternoon after our exchange in her office. I'd wanted nothing more than to soothe away the flood of anger with my daily dose of nicotine. My fingers had itched to hold the filter between them. My ears longed for the scratch of the lighter. But I'd refused to give in. A reward, not a crutch. A reward was a marker for an accomplishment. A crutch was a symbol of weakness. And I had no tolerance for weakness, especially not within myself. In the future, if you feel you can't control yourself and the need to insult me is too overwhelming, we'll deal with it privately, I suggested, exhaling smoke toward the moon.
Me?
She turned and looked up at me. You didn't even make it through your first taco tonight before cracking like an egg. Yes, well, it's over now. I both loved and hated it when I had her undivided attention. I forced myself to look away from her.
From now on, to me, you'll just be the vaguely racist, misogynistic, hard-of-hearing uncle everyone avoids at engaging with at Thanksgiving.
And you are nothing more than Naomi and Lena's annoying invisible friend I pretend to acknowledge when they insist on setting a place at the table for you, I said. Sloane stepped away from the railing and held out her hand.
Deal?
I covered her hand with mine. It was so small and delicate in my grip. Deal. It would be so easy to break something so fragile. It had been so easy to break. I hated that we both had that knowledge. Snap. Her red lips curved wickedly as we shook.
I'd say it was nice knowing you, but we both know that's a lie.
I dropped her hand and turned my back on her, willing her and the sound that haunted me to disappear. I waited until I heard the door open and close, leaving me alone in the dark on the deck, before I took a long drag on my cigarette.
14. Red Flags. Sloane.
Did you at least hide the body, Sloaney?
Nash asked when I entered the kitchen. He was rubbing Lena's shoulders while she topped off glasses of wine. He's still breathing. I see you two made up, I said to Knox, who had Naomi caged between the counter and his chest. His hands were tucked into the back pockets of her jeans, an expression of wolfish anticipation on his handsome face.
I'm impossible to stay mad at, Knox said.
All it takes is for him to load the dishwasher the right way, and I'm a puddle of forgiveness, Naomi said. Her engagement ring and wedding band winked in the light. Do you two have a minute to talk about something? I asked Naomi and Lena. Both women extracted themselves from their men and followed me into the living room on the other side of the kitchen.
I don't like the sound of this,
Knox grumbled as we left.
They're absolutely going to eavesdrop on us, Lena warned, dropping into a chair and swinging her legs over the arm.
Naomi perched on the couch and patted the cushion next to her.
Is this about the mercurial pain in your ass?
Lena choked on her wine. I shook my head. We've called a truce, and no, before you ask, I don't wish to discuss the terms of said truce. I heard the back door open and close, followed by the low rumble of male conversation. This is about what we were talking about regarding legal aid. I wanted to run something by you two. I gave them the bare bones of the Mary Louise case. I think Alan did something stupid or got caught up in the wrong crowd and his mom protected him. And no one deserves 20 years for protecting their kid. Obviously, I wouldn't just go and commit your money to anything without discussing it with you first. It might not be the right fit for what we want to do, but I'd at least like to go talk to her and get some more details about her case and her sentencing. I took a breath and scrubbed my hands over my knees. So what do you think?
I think this is an amazing idea and your dad would be so proud, Naomi said, squeezing my hand.
Agreed, Lena said. It could cost a lot, like more than we have. There wouldn't be anything left over for anyone else, I warned. It's a woman's life, Naomi said. Of course it's worth it. If you're sure, then I'd like to meet with her and hear her side of the story if she's willing to share it. Where is she incarcerated? I'll go with you, Lena volunteered. Me too, Naomi agreed. I'd like to meet her.
The fuck you three are?
Knox stomped into the room, followed by Nash. Lucian lingered in the doorway. Now, Viking, Naomi began.
Don't you now Viking me, Daze, her husband shot back. You're not going to prison, even if it is just to have a chat.
Nash had his arms crossed over his chest and his gaze locked on Lena. She shook a finger at him.
Don't you even try the bossy pants alpha male routine, hotshot. I've interviewed prisoners before.
Oh, I'm not siding with my dumbass brother. But if you're going, I'm going, Angel,
Nash said amicably. How about I save everyone a whole lot of marital strife? I'll go by myself and... There was a resounding no from everyone. Everyone including Lucian. A flare of temper winked into existence. To be fair, none of you have any right to tell me what I can and can't do. I understand the intricacies of relationships, and you all can deal with that yourselves, but I don't owe that consideration to any of you.
You're not going,
Lucian said, as if he had any right whatsoever to make such a decree.
Can I speak to you outside? I said through clenched teeth.
I'll go with you, Nash interrupted.
Well, if you two are going, I'm definitely going, Lena argued.
Ahem. This is our money for our initiative, Naomi reminded the men. Ergo, we are the ones who get to make the decisions.
Knox held up a finger like he was about to start yelling and then left the room instead. His booted footsteps echoed through the house as he stomped away and then back again. He returned with a checkbook and a pen in hand, Waylon and Piper dancing at his heels. Knox scrawled ink violently across a check, then ripped it free.
Here, now I get a say, and you're not going.
You can't just throw money at everything, Knox, Naomi pointed out, getting to her feet. This woman deserves a real second chance.
She probably does,
Knox agreed aggressively. I held up a finger.
Wait, I'm confused.
No one's arguing that this isn't a good cause, but I don't want to deal with the fallout of you three going in there and getting your hearts broken over some sad story about how life ain't fair.
Knox Morgan couldn't stand tears and broken-hearted females. They were his kryptonite.
You don't want us to try to do something good because you'll be inconvenienced by our feelings?
Naomi looked as if she'd forgotten all about Knox's dishwasher-loading prowess.
That's not what I said, Daze.
Actually, Lena interjected, it kind of is.
Not helping Solavita, Knox said under his breath. Don't take a tone with her, or I'll kick your ass and then arrest it, Nash warned his brother.
I stood up on the ottoman and whistled.
Everyone shut up!
They all shut their mouths and looked at me. Obviously, this is a hot-button issue. Let me do a little more research, and then we can discuss this like rational adults. There was a grumbling chorus of fines and okays.
Hey, what do you guys like to take for cramps? Lena asked me suddenly.
Knox and Lucian vanished from the room like someone had just suggested we form a trust circle. Nash ran his hands over Lena's hips.
You okay, Angel?
She winked at him.
Yeah, I just wanted to get the testosterone out of here so I can interrogate Sloane about her dating app.
On that note, I'm out.
But he didn't leave before planting a steamy kiss on his fiance.
Wow, I said, fanning myself.
Yeah, wow. Lena said dreamily as we all watched Nash leave. He really did have a butt that didn't quit. The haze disappeared when Nash's ass did. I flopped back down on the couch.
Waylon, the Basset Hound, hurled himself into my lap, pinning me to the cushion. He let out a snorty sigh as I played with his silky ears.
So, how's the app going? How many men are you talking to? Any dates lined up?
Lena asked. I think I might not have completed the profile correctly. I haven't matched with anyone. No messages, no matches, no unsolicited dick pics.
You must have just missed a step in the setup process, Naomi said loyally.
Let me see, Lena said. I opened the app and tossed my phone to her. Lena's eyebrows arched.
I'm sorry, are you trying not to get laid? She asked.
What are you talking about? Had I accidentally uploaded the wrong picture? Maybe someone had hacked my account and said I was into ritual sacrifice and attending spelling bees.
It can't be that bad, Naomi insisted.
Lena turned the screen in her direction and my friend winced.
Okay, she's definitely self-sabotaging. What exactly is so wrong with my profile? I demanded, struggling with the dead weight of the snoring Basset Hound.
Let's ask the experts, Lena suggested.
Don't you dare!
But it was too late. The men, who had obviously been eavesdropping again, appeared in the doorway.
Someone say experts? Nash asked with a charming grin.
Lena held up my phone.
Tell me why you wouldn't click on this profile.
The Morgans leaned in and then out again in unison.
Jesus, Sloaney. What are you trying to do, repel dicks?
Knox said. I withered in embarrassment as Lucian glanced at the screen. Unlike his friends, he didn't flinch. He smirked.
What's the first problem?
Lena asked as if she were instructing a class.
Cat, the brothers said together.
Wait, what about the cat? Cats are cute, I argued.
A cat in the profile picture says crazy cat lady, Nash explained.
And cat in the username screams it,
Knox added, stroking his beard.
Then there's the hair color.
Waylon snorted out another snore, vibrating my lap.
It was Santa's story hour. The red and green were temporary, I said defensively.
Wild hair colors in the main profile picture is a clue that the woman could be high maintenance and,
Nash said.
Attention, Hori,
Knox added. I grabbed my dyed ends.
That's rude.
I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying what you put in a dating profile is what you think are your best qualities. And all your ass is saying is that you like cats and weird hair.
Then there's the fact that you're dressed in an elf costume, Lena piled on.
Sloane, you're a smart girl. Why in the hell would you ever pick this picture?
The lighting was great. I liked my smile, and the angle made my cheekbones look more defined. Besides, I thought showing me with a cat would tell guys that I'm nurturing.
Why the fuck do you want to look nurturing?
Knox said, horrified.
Because she's ready to settle down and start a family, Naomi told her husband.
I need a drink,
Lucian muttered under his breath. He left the room.
No offense, Sloaney, but this profile doesn't make you look like marriage material. It makes you look like a human red flag,
Nash said.
Are these rules written down somewhere?
Yeah, on a place called the internet,
Knox shot back.
Great, I muttered. So how do I fix this?
Now that we can help you with, Lena announced. By the time Lucian returned to the room with a tumbler of liquor, I was standing against the stone fireplace holding a glass of wine, which, according to Naomi, said responsible but fun, with my hand on my hip, pretending to laugh at something self-appointed art director Knox was saying while Lena took pictures. Nash had removed a lampshade from a floor lamp and was angling the light bulb in my face.
I'm hilarious, and you're having the best fucking time,
Knox insisted on a near snarl.
Maybe if you'd tell me a joke, I suggested, wondering if I should have just skipped over dating and gone straight to the sperm bank instead. Do you think we should show more boob or more stomach? Lena asked, cocking her head and studying me.
Boob,
the Morgan men said in unison. Lucian was looking at me with a strangely murderous expression on his face. I stared back.
Oh, I think we've got one. You look all smoldery and sexy, Lena said, studying the phone screen.
Naomi peeked over her shoulder.
Yet approachable and interesting.
Knox and Nash leaned in to give their opinions.
Hot, but not too hot,
Knox decided.
You'll land a husband in no time,
Nash agreed.
And we'll make sure he's worthy when you do.
Let me see, I demanded.
I glanced at the screen when they held it up and felt heat rise in my cheeks. I'd been giving Lucian the side eye. That was how I looked when I looked at him? My chin was jutted out, lips parted, eyes smoldering. I looked hot and horny. Damn, I actually looked good.
Lucian approached and, to my humiliation, peered at the photo. His gaze returned to me and I knew he got it. He knew that I'd been looking at him, that that look had been just for him. What was one more secret between the two of us?
I need a real drink, I muttered, putting my untouched wine down on the coffee table. Wordlessly, Lucian handed me his glass and walked out again. I gawked down at it in surprise. Naomi nudged me.
Look at you two playing nice.
I told you electrocuting them wasn't stupid,
Knox said. It's just a truce, I said. Then I helped myself to a slug of what turned out to be very nice bourbon.
Waylay sauntered into the room and threw her arm around Naomi's waist.
What's going on in here?
I thought you were fixing your teacher's laptop, Naomi said, brushing Waylay's hair out of her face. The girl shrugged.
I finished that in like 10 minutes. People really need to pay attention to their virus software. Easiest $30 I made all week. Anyway, you guys sounded like you were having more fun than I was. I came to snoop.
We're helping Sloane with her dating profile, Naomi explained.
Cool. Can I have more cobbler? Waylay asked.
Only if you get me a second helping,
Nash called from where he was putting the shade back on the lamp. Naomi opened her mouth, but Waylay held up a hand.
Sorry, Aunt Naomi, but a grown-up already said I could, and I'm not willing to wait for a second opinion.
Fine, but I'm coming with you and making sure your second helping doesn't weigh half a ton, Naomi conceded. They headed for the kitchen just as Lucian returned with another glass.
Let's talk about this username, Lena said, drawing my attention away from him and back to the topic at hand.
Nash peered over her shoulder, his hands settling on her hips.
Four-eyed cat librarian?
I winced. Okay, even I had to admit that wasn't my finest moment of creativity. What do I want my username to say about me?
That you're not crazy,
Knox said, settling himself on the couch. Waylon hopped up next to him and flopped over on his back. While my friends decided on a new username, I sipped bourbon in a wingback chair by the fire and wondered why I was so bad at this. I could rock a grant application like a boss. Put me in a social situation, and I could charm the pants off a cute single guy in record time. But having to market myself in profile form felt overwhelming and stupid.
You're holding your wrist,
Lucian said, his voice low and grave. I jolted. I'd been so lost in thought I hadn't felt him approach.
What?
I glanced down and realized I was absent-mindedly rubbing my right wrist with my opposite hand.
Does it still bother you?
His voice was soft, but there was something brittle about the words.
No, of course not, I said, dropping my hands.
Naomi reappeared.
Did you hurt yourself? She asked,
proving that becoming Waylay's guardian had given her superhuman hearing. Is it carpal tunnel? Lena asked.
I broke my wrist in high school. It was no big deal, I added quickly.
Knox frowned.
I don't remember that.
You had already graduated. It happened right before summer break.
I forgot about that,
Nash mused. He pinned me with a long, inscrutable look. As chief of police, Nash would have access to all those old records.
How did you break it? Waylay asked.
I purposely didn't look at Lucian, but I could still feel his attention on me.
The same way a teenager breaks anything, with a lot of clumsiness and a flair for drama.
And it still bothers you? Naomi asked me.
No, I barely think about it anymore.
Lena hooted.
Guess who just got 3 matches and 2 DMs?
Who? I asked, perking up.
Blonde, dirty book reader, she said, and triumphantly tossed me my phone.
3 photos of reasonably attractive, not insane men stared back at me.
You guys are miracle workers, I told them.
Look at that. You're practically married already, Naomi teased. On a low growl, Lucian abruptly left the room.
What the hell crawled up his ass?
Knox wondered as he stole Waylay's spoon and helped himself to some of her cobbler.
Maybe he had to fart, Waylay suggested.
15. Prison lot striptease. Lucian. I started my day at 5 a.m. I'd worked out, had breakfast, handled 3 conference calls, 2 from the car, fired 3 people, and closed an 8-figure deal, all before noon. I had 2 in-house meetings that couldn't be rescheduled, so I did the thing I really didn't want to do and offloaded them onto Nolan with strict instructions not to fuck anything up, all so I could beat her here.